The other reason is that they have not done their homework, or they have done it poorly. Often they are comparing their building or space to a space of higher quality or class. The final reason they overprice is that they are setting the price based on how much they paid for the building itself. How much you pay for a building has nothing to do with how much you can charge tenants for rent. Tip, an important lesson of leasing. The market sets the rental prices, not you. As with any good sales function, eventually prospecting begins. From lists and sources that we have developed over time and others that we would develop specifically for the project at hand, we send our literature and make cold calls to gauge interest. We work inside and outside the target location, and we even do out-of-state prospecting, targeting companies that are coming into town. We give a lot of presentations to tenants in other properties that are in our target size and business range. As I mentioned earlier, we'll also work within our industry and communicate regularly with the other agents and advisors in the community. We identify which ones specialize in buildings like the one we are representing. We do our presentations to their offices and their staff. We use email, direct mail, and host parties to keep others informed about the properties we represent. And, of course, we use the sophistication of the Internet to help us target those business prospects who are using the web to troll for new office space. Our sophisticated websites are searchable and detailed. We are connected directly to listing services, and our user interface is the result of more than 10 years of improvements. Clearly, you're beginning to see that a lot goes into finding the right tenants and getting a lease signed sooner rather than later. Once we understand how we're going to market the property and to which companies, we create a development strategy that will outline our plans to fill the building. This is a complete plan that includes rent rates, leasing terms, expense stops, the maximum expenses per square foot for the building, tenant improvement limits, other concessions, even commissions. The sign in front of the building may be the most visible part, but it is the smallest part of the marketing efforts for a building. If only it were as easy as hammering a sign into the ground and answering the phone. The truth is, experience is everything in the process. There are literally an unlimited number of pits that the novice can fall into. Over our careers, we have fallen into them all. That's another reason leasing agents and advisors are so valuable. They've already taken the falls for you. The deal makers and deal breakers in leasing. Earlier in this chapter, I mentioned that it takes more than the vision of great space, space that matches the business, to actually get the business. There are more variables that come into play. I believe there are numerous variables that every client will consider before signing on the dotted line. Here's my top 20 list. 1. Rates. Of course, every client is going to be concerned with the rent and the cost per square foot, because most every client has a budget. He knows how much his business can allocate to this expense line item. I work to stay within my clients' budgets, not trying to oversell them. It is in everyone's best interest to have a client who pays on time every month. Rental rate is one of the most important considerations on the list. 2. Term. The length of the lease agreement is another important factor. Sometimes my user clients are looking for a short-term fix, and sometimes they want the lease agreement to run longer in exchange for some other consideration. This can be a highly negotiable variable, and the match is made when the term connects with the client's objectives. 3. Free rent. Many building owners offer free rent for some length of time as part of the negotiated agreement. What's negotiated is the number of months and what is included. Is it just the rent, or does it cover common area maintenance fees, parking fees, etc.? 4. Tenant improvements. Many lease agreements have negotiated into them some allowance money for tenant improvements, or TIs as they are called. This can be a lot of money or a little money. A good leasing agent and advisor will know the current market and know what is a realistic yet generous amount to request. A rookie can really mess up an otherwise good deal by demanding too much, or cause a client to overpay by not asking for enough. 5. Layout. This refers to the interior floor plan and the shape and size of the space. Sometimes square or rectangular spaces are a plus, and at other times, oddly shaped space is what a client is looking for. It all depends on the client and the business. Again, when I know a client's objectives, I know what space configurations will work and which ones won't. 6. Quality of building. The building exterior on a commercial property is like the curb appeal on a residential property. It says a lot about your business, just as a home says a lot about you. A prestigious building with excellent upkeep and landscaping says to the world that this company is a player, that it is reputable and can handle my business. A shoddy-looking building tells the world that a company might be fly-by-night, not very progressive, or just plain cheap. If the clothes make the man, as the saying goes, the building exterior makes the business. 7. Parking type and ratio. I've walked away from buildings as an investor and as a leasing advisor because the property is underparked. In other words, the number of parking spaces for the size of the building is light. I know my clients' customers will not be happy if every time they visit, they have to allot an extra 10 minutes to search for a place to park. Nothing is worse than a building that doesn't have enough parking, and in most cases, there is little that can be done about it. 8. Parking location. As bad as it is to not have enough parking spaces, clients also don't like having to park far away from a building. The reasons are obvious, with safety concerns being one of the biggest. No one likes the idea of walking a great distance through a dark parking lot or alleyway to get to the car. And it's no fun to walk a distance, briefcase, workout bag, coffee cup, and cell phone in hand, to get into the building in the morning. We won't even talk about rain, snow, and ice. Parking should be easy and safe. 9. Efficiency. Clients look for generally efficient buildings, meaning that they are easy to find, get into, walk through, locate the businesses in, and find the restrooms, etc. Some buildings, and you can probably think of a few yourself, are just poorly designed. It's hard to find the entry, it's hard to find the elevator, it's hard to find the office numbers, it's hard to get to the restrooms, and the list goes on. 10. Access. Here's a big one. Accessibility means how easy it is to get into and out of the building site. Some buildings have excellent access, and others do not. I just moved one company because the business owner hated making an unprotected left-hand turn across a very busy street every time he turned into the building. While we were looking for his new space, he would joke that he was going to hold me personally responsible if he got into a wreck while he impatiently waited. We found him space with better access, and he is much happier. 11. Signage. Some businesses need very visible signage, and others do not. This is one of the negotiation points that is critical for businesses that rely on either walk-in business or that want to use their building signage as awareness advertising. 12. Amenities on site. Some buildings have shopping, banking, places to eat, dry cleaners, and more perks right on site in lobbies or in underground retail centers. To some of our clients, these conveniences matter. I know one person who leases in a building on a small municipal airport runway that has hangar space for corporate jets. That's a big amenity for some business owners. 13. Amenities off-site. Then there are some buildings that seem to be on an island all their own. There's no place to go for lunch, there's no grocery store nearby, there's little to nothing around. Sometimes this is the nature of new development. Retail and restaurants have not moved in yet, but sometimes it's just the way it is. 14. Property management. Good property management is like a gourmet meal that has great presentation, tastes amazing, and completely satisfies you. And best of all, you never have to be concerned with any of the details. It's just there for you to enjoy. Bad property management lets you know it's there at every turn. To go back to our gourmet meal, you have to ask for the salt. Your silverware isn't clean. The food looks overcooked. And in general, the whole experience is unpleasant. All you see are the details, the missed details. 15. Ownership. The ownership matters as much as the property management. Some owners can be terrific landlords, and others have baggage. One friend of mine leases space in a building advised by our company. The building owner is a very successful entrepreneur who makes his rounds every so often to his tenant businesses just to see how things are going and to catch up. He's a good guy, a welcome visitor, and a friend to those who lease from him. There's another building owner down the street who jets off for Cabo every other week and is incredibly unresponsive. 16. Americans with Disabilities Act compliance. To many businesses, this is a very important consideration. It is critical that those who use wheelchairs have easy and safe access to all areas of the building and grounds. 17. Location, location, location. Some space has views of beautiful vistas, and other space has no view at all. Some space is visible right off the elevator, and other space is tucked back in some insignificant hallway corner. The location within the building matters. It says a lot about a business. 18. Location of the building itself. This is the most critical requirement, and that's why it is not just number 18 on our list, but 19 and 22. The right location is one of the absolute musts. What to look for in a leasing agent or advisor. My hope is with the stories and the workload described in this chapter so far, that I have convinced you to at least consider the value of having a leasing agent or advisor working on your side. If that's the case, then I should also point out that not all leasing agents or advisors are created equal. There are leasing agents out there who don't do their homework and say yes to shaky businesses all the time. There are leasing agents who don't know the market, leasing agents who are terrible negotiators, and leasing agents who simply can't sell. If you're going to hire a leasing agent, and I suggest you do, hire a good one, a true advisor. Aside from the obvious qualities like experience, motivation, organization, intelligence, expertise, and integrity, here's what else to look for. Relationship versus transaction. Although real estate seems like a huge industry, it really is a small, local industry. Each city or town has a small, tightly knit, and very intertwined real estate community. It is critical to find a leasing broker or advisor who sees his or her job as one of relationship building, not just completing transactions. I have spent the last 20 years doing deals and in the process building excellent relationships with the real estate professionals where I live and work. And this effort pays off for me and my clients every day. The reality is that most transactions happen through other leasing agents and advisors. The opportunities come in through them, and we market our owners' opportunities outbound through them. How eager would they be to bring to me top-quality tenants or even be interested in looking at space I pitch to them if I had a reputation for win-lose arrangements where I win and they lose? Not very. As a rule, I put a great deal of time and energy into providing lots of information to prospects and clients. Even if there is no agreement for representation, I generally am eager to help because I know that's how to build a relationship. And experience has proven to me that relationships eventually pay off. One story I recall was when a large healthcare insurance provider was moving into town. A high-powered agent came in from New York and called our office and said she was coming in to look at space. I asked if she needed local representation, and she said no. Regardless, I told her I'd get her a list of available buildings by the next day. We met, and during that meeting, I helped her in any way that I could. When she returned to New York, she told her boss she met an agent who could really help and who she wanted to work with. He said no, but she insisted. Long story short, she got her way, and I ended up doing not one, but nearly 50 transactions with that company. Had I not been willing to freely give of my time and knowledge, I would not have been on the receiving end of that lucrative piece of business. Rapport with you. This whole leasing effort has to be a partnership. There has to be a good rapport. A good leasing agent or advisor understands your objectives and then works to match the right space and the right tenants. Plus, a good leasing agent or advisor willingly takes on even small businesses or buildings and educates clients as they grow into bigger businesses. I found space for one software company many years ago. It was their first space when they were just 3 people strong. I think the office was all of 1,200 square feet. At the time, I was doing much bigger deals, but to me, that didn't matter. We developed rapport, and within a few years, I handled the transactions surrounding their 137,000 square foot corporate office and their more than 44 offices worldwide. It happens. Location knowledge. Any leasing agent or advisor you work with must have not only a versed knowledge of the metro area, but also intimate knowledge of the submarket area where your building is located. This comes back to the fact that real estate is really a small, localized industry. The best leasing agents and advisors are hands down the most knowledgeable people around, not about the whole city or town, but about 1 square mile. Find this person and you'll be in good shape. It's not hard. Just drive around and look at whose name appears on the leasing signs most frequently. Dealmaker versus processor. There are leasing agents out there who are not advisors. They are the people who do little more than play middleman and parrot messages back and forth between prospect and building owner. That's not the type of representation you want. You want an agent advisor who will add value by working for you and negotiating on your behalf. Anyone who has some training can relay information and process paper. That's not what you're paying for. You want to find a true advisor who can weed out the ridiculous and the no chance in you know where offers and deal points to get to the end game quickly and efficiently. Reputation. Finally, and this probably goes without saying, you want a leasing agent and advisor with a solid reputation in the community. How can you be sure? You ask around. You talk to other building owners and talk to other business owners who have worked with the person you are considering. It's worth the extra time and the effort to do this, and can be the first step to developing a leasing agent or advisor partner for life. These are the qualities I have developed in myself over the years, and they are the same qualities that I work to foster in young people who are entering this profession. Not all can cut it. The requirements are demanding, and if they can't cut it, they either get out of the business altogether or move over to my competition. Either is okay with me. Choosing your leasing agent or advisor partner is one of the most important decisions you will ever make. It can mean the difference between a property that generates positive cash flow and one that doesn't. It can mean the difference between owning an asset or a liability. A good leasing agent or advisor can actually enhance the reputation and standing of your business within the community and bring you more business along with more profitability. The last word, Coppola's Five Rules of Leasing. I will not need every deal. I will discuss challenges with the client immediately. I will not allow a commission to drive any transaction. I will consider long-term relationships more important than any fee. I will develop a professional profile that provides me access to all decision makers. Ways to learn more. SIOR, Society of Industrial and Office Realtors. CRE, Counselors of Real Estate.
R. Craig Coppola is the top producing office broker in Lee & Associates' 35-year history, as well as one of the founding principals of Lee & Associates Arizona. Lee & Associates is the largest broker-owned real estate company in the U.S., with over 50 offices nationwide. Craig has completed over 3,500 lease and sale transactions in the past 30 years, totaling a value in excess of $3.5 billion. He has a lengthy track record of representing companies on a national and international basis. His clients include Motorola, HDR, JDA Software, and more. Craig has been awarded National Chapter President, the highest honor given by the largest real estate development trade association, for NAIOP, National Association of Office and Industrial Properties, and NAIOP Office Broker of the Year 6 times. He has also earned the top 3 designations in the real estate industry, CCIM, CRE, and SIOR. Less than 40 people worldwide hold all 3 designations. In addition to his real estate career, Craig is also the author of 4 books. His first book, How to Win in Commercial Real Estate Investing, won him the Best First-Time Author Award from the National Association of Real Estate Editors, NARE. As a follow-up to his investing book, Craig published The Art of Commercial Real Estate Leasing in December 2014. In addition to his 2 real estate books, Craig has also written The Fantastic Life, How to Get It, Live It, and Pass It On. His most recent book, Chasing Excellence, was co-written with Lee & Associates founder Bill Lee.
14. Ken McElroy. The Perils of Careless Property Management. One of the greatest pleasures in my life is having best friends as business partners. In my life, Ken McElroy is one of those rare persons. On top of that, Ken has made me a millionaire many times over. There have been many valuable lessons I learned from my rich dad. One lesson is, out of every bad deal comes a good person. This lesson has been priceless because it makes me less hesitant about having business deals go bad. Explaining further, I will often go into a deal, even if I do not trust the people. I go in because I know that I will probably meet a good person along the way, even if the deal goes bad. I met Ken in a deal that went bad. In fact, it was a horrible deal. The person who put the deal together, a young man I will call George, eventually went to jail. The Securities and Exchange Commission, SEC, eventually shut his operation down. Unfortunately, George was married with 3 kids. Ken and I smelled a rat early on and did not participate in George's investment scheme. We almost invested, but we passed on his bogus opportunity. The good news is I met Ken, just as my rich dad's lesson taught me. Today, Ken is a rich dad advisor, writing on real estate. His books, The ABCs of Real Estate Investing, The Advanced Guide to Real Estate Investing, and The ABCs of Property Management, are must-reads for anyone who is interested in real estate investing. He also has a priceless product entitled, How to Increase the Income from Your Real Estate Investments. It includes a due diligence checklist, which is an essential checklist that every investor should go through before buying a property. The thing I like most about Ken is that he is extremely generous with his knowledge. He and I have traveled to many parts of the world to speak about our favorite subject, investing in real estate. He is also the author of the book, The Sleeping Giant. He and his wife, Laura, are two of Kim's and my favorite friends. We have a great time together, teaching, sharing knowledge, and supporting each other's families in becoming richer and more financially secure in a financially volatile world. Robert Kiyosaki.
Of all the subjects in this book, property management might be the most misunderstood. The reason for this is simply the fact that in order to be a successful real estate investor, you don't necessarily have to be a successful property manager. That statement might seem a little odd to you at first, but if you think about it for a second, you'll know it's true. You can have tremendous instincts and ability to find, analyze, and even take down phenomenal real estate deals. You might have an extensive network of equity sources and solid and trusted investors waiting for your next deal. You can have a solid team of lawyers, mortgage brokers, and general contractors. All of these things will enable you to be successful at finding and investing in real estate. But they are all transactional. By that, I mean they are needed to invest well in real estate. This is often the focus of many real estate investment books. None of these things, however, will make your investment successful once you actually own it. One of the things I appreciate about Robert Kiyosaki and the Rich Dad team is that they understand that being a successful real estate investor goes beyond just finding and acquiring quality deals. They know you have to manage those deals effectively to realize their full wealth-making potential. That is why I'm so glad that Robert contacted me to write this chapter. Mark my words, you can have the most incredible real estate holdings in the entire world, but if they are mismanaged, they could quickly become worthless. Why is this? Because in order to be a successful real estate investor, the first rule you have to remember is that real estate values are typically based on performance, not on the asset itself. And in order for your real estate portfolio to run at its maximum potential, you need to manage your property professionally. Tip: the first rule you have to remember is that real estate values are typically based on performance, not on the asset itself. In this chapter, I'll show you why property management is so vital to the health of your investments. The topic of how to manage a property effectively, while an important thing to know as a real estate investor, is much too large a topic for the space I've been given here. Rather than try and give you a crash course on how to manage properties effectively, my efforts here will focus on 1. Why professional property management is essential for success. 2. What successful property management entails. 3. How to find an exceptional property manager for your assets. I guarantee that a fuller understanding of the importance of property management will make you a more successful real estate investor. In fact, I would venture to say that it's essential. An outsider's perspective. Just like you, I didn't begin my career as a successful real estate investor. I have people like Robert and the Rich Dad team to thank for opening my eyes more fully to the immense wealth-building potential that real estate investing affords. Well before I began investing in real estate, I made my living by managing other people's assets. In the process, I've built some of the largest and most well-known property management companies in the southwestern United States. In the course of managing more than 25,000 apartment units, I saw firsthand how poor property management can cause untold damage to a property's value and to the net worth of an investor. I still remember the day when John called me at my office. John was part of a group of investors in Colorado who had purchased a multifamily property in Phoenix, Arizona, and he was in a bit of a panic. "What can I do for you, John?" I said over the phone. "I think we have a bit of a problem with one of our properties," was his response. "I was wondering if you could help us out with our operations." As it turned out, John had more than just a little problem. His company's property was literally in shambles. What brought them to this point was a series of mistakes that, in the course of my career as a property manager, I've seen over and over again. John's first problem was that his group purchased a large multifamily building with very little research, which is commonly called due diligence, and they had little knowledge of the local real estate market, since they were based in Colorado. John and his partner's second problem was that they decided to be cheap. In an effort to save some money, or to make money off the property, they gave the task of managing their property to someone in their office, who was located in Denver, and who had no experience in property management. This person flew down about once a month, if that, to see how things were going. Why an investment group of very smart individuals would trust a multi-million dollar asset to someone with no experience is a mystery to me. I knew things had to be bad because John was basically firing himself for poor performance, and things are usually in pretty bad shape for this to happen. In fact, things had gotten so bad that they were having trouble making their mortgage payment. I reluctantly told John I was willing to help him. After hanging up the phone, I shook my head. I knew the property he was talking about, and while it was in a good location and in a great neighborhood, the property itself was known for having high turnover of residents and high crime. Drug activity was prevalent at this property, and members of local drug cartels were actually living in some of the units. In the first week that we took over, one of these problems came to a boiling point when one resident, a local drug dealer, was shot down in cold blood inside his unit right in front of his girlfriend. It was well known that this was a gang-related incident because the man's hands were tied behind his back, and he had been shot point-blank in the head, execution style. His girlfriend was unharmed and is now in the witness protection program. So as you can see, this was definitely not a little problem. You're probably asking yourself, what kind of property was this? What a terrible neighborhood. I can tell you that this property was in an upscale area near major employers, a school, and an upscale regional mall. This kind of thing can happen anywhere. When my team surveyed the 250-unit property, we were shocked at its condition. We already knew its reputation, and we were expecting it to be bad. What we didn't expect was just how poorly the asset itself had been maintained. the physical condition of the property was astonishingly bad. The landscaping was completely shot. Decks were rotting through and posed potential safety risks. And more than 20% of the interiors of many units were so run down that they were not rentable. The result was that while comparable nearby properties were enjoying occupancy levels in the mid-90% range, this property was collecting less than 70% of the potential income. This, of course, is because many units were vacant, and many of the current tenants were not paying their rent. Beyond that, people were leaving the property in droves because they were worried about their own safety and disgusted at the condition of the property. So the owner's problem was twofold. They couldn't rent to new residents because they did not have the money to fix up the property and the existing vacant units. And many of the current residents were moving out, citing health and safety reasons. As a result, the financial performance of the property was very poor. We quickly realized we had a lot of work on our hands. Thankfully, my company has tremendous experience in turning around poorly performing properties, and we were eventually able to get this property in good condition. But it took a lot of time and a lot of money. In the end, the poor decision to save money cost John and his partners millions of dollars. But the damage to their partnership was irreparable. The tensions boiled over, and their partnership became unglued. Harsh words were spoken, friendships were destroyed, and John's reputation was severely damaged. I had little pity for John and his partners. While it is unfortunate that they lost so much money, those losses could have easily been avoided if they had retained a quality property manager to partner with them in both the due diligence process when purchasing their property and to help them manage it effectively after they acquired it. Knowledge, the key to success. You may be thinking that this is just a severe, isolated case of stupidity. I assure you it is not. Every day, smart investors become idiots because they lack knowledge of the importance of property management and underestimate the work involved in managing a property well. I now make my living by capitalizing on situations just like John's. Because of my years of experience in property management, I buy deals just like John's at a significant discount from their market value and turn them around and reap huge returns for my partners. Here's the good news. If you take the time to understand the importance of property management and to attain a thorough knowledge of how successful property management is achieved, you too can find the key to success as a real estate investor. So this begs the question, what does successful property management look like? The triple threat. Tip. In my experience, successful property managers know how to improve the value of a property in three general areas, what I like to call the triple threat of property management: income, expenses, and systems. Income. As I stated earlier in this section, the value of a property is not based on the asset itself, but rather on its financial performance. The number one misconception that can turn a good real estate investment into a bad one is by not understanding that real estate is a business, not just an investment. As such, the most important aspect of your investment is not how it looks, where it's at, or even how much it costs. While those things are important, they pale in comparison to the importance of the bottom line. In order to be a successful real estate investor, you must understand that the value of your property, just as with any business, is based on how much net operating income it produces, that is, income after expenses. Income minus expense equals net operating income, NOI. And when it comes to maximizing your property's NOI, nothing is more important and easier to control than the actual total income your property produces. In investment real estate, total income is determined by a number of factors. They are rent, occupancy, other revenue opportunities. Rents. One clear indication that a property could be mismanaged is when its rents are obviously substantially less than what the rest of the market is charging. I come across this frequently when I'm looking at a potential acquisition, and it excites me. As an investor, buying a property with low rents is a substantial opportunity. In order to understand the importance of getting your rents right, you need to understand a little bit about how an investment property is valued. Tip: the value of a property is not based on the asset itself, but rather on its financial performance. The most common way to value a property is by using a capitalization or cap rate. In any given market, cap rates will vary. You don't have to worry about how to figure out what a market's cap rate is. You can get that number from a knowledgeable broker. For our purposes, you do have to understand how cap rates are used to estimate the current value of a property. The equation looks like this: net operating income, NOI, divided by market cap rate equals value. What does this look like? For simplicity's sake, let's assume we are looking to buy a 200-unit property that makes $500,000 in annual net operating income, NOI. And let's assume the market capitalization rate is 7%. That would mean the estimated value of your asset in that market would be $500,000 divided by 7%, or $7,142,857. Now, let's look at why keeping a close eye on your rents and making sure that they are in line with comparable properties is so important, and quite frankly, the easiest way to add value to your property. How NOI affects a property's value. Let's assume our property has an average rent of $800. During our due diligence, we find out that the average market rents for comparable properties is $900. That would mean that the current ownership, with absentee management, is realizing a rent loss of $20,000 per month, 200 units times $100, which equals out to $240,000 per year in lost potential income. That would mean that instead of an annual NOI of $500,000, our property should be making $740,000 per year. Let's see how that affects the value of our property. $740,000 divided by 7% equals $10,571,428. Amazing, isn't it? While it takes time to increase everyone's rents by $100 per month, it is worth it because by doing so, as shown in this example, we have created an additional $3,428,571 in value. The best thing about this is that I am creating value through good property management of the existing property and with the existing residents. So my business plan is not just based on relying on market appreciation, but I usually get that too. That's the power of effectively managing your property's income, and the reason why keeping a close eye on not only your rents, but the market rents, is so vital to your property's financial health. Occupancy. Another great way to add value is to increase the occupancy. Remember, the net operating income determines your value, so any and all income is very important. One very basic method to create better occupancy is have a good base of residents who take good care of your property and who do not move often. This is done by properly screening every occupant. It is typical for many property managers to not run credit and criminal background checks for every occupant, a practice that every professional property management company does. It doesn't take a rocket scientist to explain the potential problems of renting to someone who cannot pay the rent or who creates problems in your property. But in a rush to fill vacant units, this basic function is often overlooked. Problem residents can and do create vacancy and decrease your occupancy and can cause damage to the property itself. They can drive out good-paying residents, which lowers occupancy, and many times they end up on a delinquent list, creating more work for the owner, eventually to be evicted, which also lowers your occupancy. Higher vacancy creates higher expenses with increases in maintenance, advertising, payroll, and supplies. There are countless other ways that a good property manager can increase your occupancy. Get him on your investment team, and you will see the results. Other revenue opportunities. In addition to rents, a property can realize substantial income if you look for numerous other revenue opportunities. These would be things like utility sub-metering, adding washers and dryers, charging pet rent and large pet deposits, charging rent premiums for prime locations. There are literally dozens of ways to increase your property's income like this. The problem is that most people don't know that these opportunities even exist, let alone charge for them. A real-life story. How 288 washers and dryers netted $1.9 million. My partner Ross and I recently purchased a 288-unit building in Tulsa, Oklahoma. One of the strategies for our investment was to add a washer and dryer in every unit. This property already had small laundry rooms with all the electrical and plumbing in every unit. All we had to do was purchase the machines and install them. Before we did this, we checked the local market to determine what additional rent we could get for a washer and dryer. As it turned out, many of the residents were already renting them, in many cases for $40 to $50 per month. We decided to buy 288 sets of washers and dryers and install them in the first year of operation. We budgeted a $40 increase to be realized over a two-year period. Let's look at the value we created for our investment. 288 units times $40 per month equals $11,520 per month. $11,520 times 12 months equals $138,240 in potential annual NOI. $138,240 NOI divided by 7% cap rate equals $1,974,857 added value. There are many revenue opportunities that may be great ideas to you, but are considered ordinary for a professional property management company. Expenses. When it comes to property management, expenses are generally the factor you have the least control over. The reason for this is that they are most often dictated to you. Typical expenses are for advertising and marketing, repairs and maintenance, management fees, payroll, utilities, property taxes, and insurance. Property taxes, insurance, and utilities will be the biggest expenses a property will face. To a large extent, these are costs you simply can't control. However, there are a few things you can do. For instance, a professional management company might have better purchasing power when it comes to insurance premiums and can get a better rate than the average person because of the size of its account. And you can also negotiate the property limits and the deductibles. A good property manager will utilize a tax consultant to analyze whether he might be able to challenge the property tax for the property. Remember, talking about running credit and criminal background checks? Well, let's examine the expense side of this. The actual credit check itself is paid for by the potential renter, so the cost, which is usually less than $50, is not paid by you. If you have ever bought or refinanced a house, you know that you pay for your own credit check. Tip: the cost of not running a credit report and a criminal background check is very high. Eventually, you will get burned. Here is a typical scenario. You spend your hard-earned money getting a unit rent-ready from the last move-out. Let's say $500 for cleaning, painting, making minor repairs, and cleaning the carpets. A bad resident moves in. You now have a renter who does not pay you. You are losing revenue because you cannot re-rent this until they move or are evicted. The cost to serve notices and to evict varies by state, so let's say it costs about $500. Eventually, they move out, owing you rent plus legal costs plus damages. You now must get the unit ready to rent, again, which costs you another $500. Don't get caught up in the estimated amounts. The point in this scenario is that you learn a lesson to run background checks. So far, you would have spent $1,000 to get the unit rent-ready two times. Legal fees were $500. Unpaid rent, late charges, etc., are estimated at $800. All in all, this mistake cost you $2,300. There was $1,500 in actual expenses, plus your time and lost rent until you could rent the newly vacant unit. I think you realize that this story concerns just one unit. Imagine if this were happening on a 200-unit property. These additional expenses resulting from high turnover due to poor management can and will lead to a lower overall property value. Systems. In our discussion here about systems, I want you to think back to the story about John and his investors. While they were facing management issues surrounding both income and expenses, they were also facing serious issues regarding their property's systems. They didn't have any. What I mean by that is that due to poor management, they allowed a horrible resident base to move into the property, and the property itself was in serious disrepair due to deferred maintenance issues. All of these things added up to major losses for John and his partners. Had they had solid management systems in place, that management would have used strict occupancy standards for potential residents. They would have performed extensive background checks, verifying the potential resident's income, job history, and rental history. They would have trained staff that would handle the daily reports to the management company and perform daily maintenance. The property would have been following an approved operating budget with monthly goals. The vacant units would have been rent-ready within 3 days of the prior move-out. The lack of all these systems or policies and procedures equaled lost income. Do you feel lucky? I've only scratched the surface of how property management, whether good or bad, can affect the value of your investment. Needless to say, there are hundreds of other factors that go into effectively managing a property, and the margin of error is very small. One seemingly minor oversight can end up costing you hundreds of thousands, if not millions of dollars. It should go without saying that managing a property is a full-time job, requiring an inordinate amount of time and expertise. So the question you have to ask yourself is, do I feel lucky? Well, do you? Do you feel confident that you have the expertise and the time to effectively manage your hard-earned investments? If so, then this chapter should be a reminder and a catalyst for you to further increase your property management knowledge and to go back and reevaluate how effectively you are managing your properties. A timely review of your practices and a little time spent furthering your property management knowledge could net you even more income than you are already realizing. If you don't feel confident in managing your own properties, or don't feel that you have the time available to do it effectively, then by all means find a good professional property manager and hire him as soon as possible. It will be one of the best business moves you will ever make. Finding a good property manager is not as simple as picking up the Yellow Pages and calling the company that sounds the most professional. Given the information we've covered already, it stands to reason that choosing your property manager will be one of the most important decisions you'll make in regards to your investment. Here are some helpful to-dos for finding the right fit for your property. This is by no means a comprehensive list, but it will get you thinking in the right frame of mind. For a more comprehensive discussion on this topic, see my book, The ABCs of Property Management. My top five words of wisdom. 1. Use your team. 2. Trust but verify. 3. Find the right fit. 4. You get what you pay for. 5. Money matters. 1. Use your team. As Robert Kiyosaki says, business and investing are a team sport. If you don't know of a reputable property manager that you can trust fully with your investment, then ask the members of your team. Chances are they will be able to refer you to an excellent company. But don't take their word for it. As I always say, trust but verify. 2. Trust but verify. If you were smart, you conducted a thorough due diligence on your property before you purchased it. You probably dug into every financial, scrutinized every lease, and walked every unit. You need to perform the same level of due diligence when looking to hire a property manager. Get a full client list and interview the existing clients of the management company in question. Do they like the service they receive? Have there been any obvious mistakes or blunders you should be concerned about? Ask how the property management company has increased the value of the owner's property. Also, interview the employees of the company and the potential on-property manager for your property. Make sure they are upbeat, knowledgeable, and a good fit for your personality. You will have to interact with these people on a continual basis. 3. Find the right fit. There are tons of different types of management companies out there, each with their own specialization. Some companies will specialize in commercial property management, while others will specialize in apartments. Some companies will be better suited for large properties, others will be a perfect fit for smaller properties. The point is that, even if you do find a good management company, they might not be good for you and your needs. You wouldn't want to hire a large property management company that specializes in large apartment buildings to manage your duplex. They might be awesome at what they do, but your property would get lost in the fold. It would be too small for them to give it full attention. On the other hand, a smaller local property management company would jump at the chance to manage your asset, and they would give you personalized service and attention. 4. You get what you pay for. Too often, people want to save money, and they balk at the fees a management company charges. Don't. Management fees vary by market and property type and size, but I will say that if a fee looks too good to be true, it probably is. Every investment in the world, if it is managed, costs you money. The beauty of property management is that you at least know what the fee is. Often with investments like mutual funds and stocks, the fees are hidden and substantial, so you don't feel them. You know what they say, ignorance is bliss. But with property management, the fees should be clearly explained and spelled out up front. I guarantee that if you find a good company, it will be worth its fees. In just a few simple and common examples, I've shown you how much income an effectively managed property can pull down. 5. Money matters. Make sure that any company you retain has a very good accounting department. When it comes to managing your investment, proper accounting is a must. You want the company that you use not only to understand what is going on with your property's operations, but also what's going on with your property's finances. Also, make sure that your property's money will be held in a separate account. In conclusion, nothing is more important to the success of your investment than good, knowledgeable property management. Oftentimes, it is the difference between meeting your investment goals and losing untold